still details filtering in. We pretty much know the what at this point. Early this morning, U.S. time, Anwar al-Awlaki, U.S.-born Muslim cleric, top al-Qaeda figure in the Arabian Peninsula, was taken out by a drone strike in northern Yemen. We know the what, but what about the who? How important was this character on the U.S. kill or capture list? We've been talking with a lot of people. For instance, Republican Peter King, a congressman representing New York's 3rd District and chairman of the House Committee on Homeland Security.
It's more important than the killing of bin Laden. Now, obviously, bin Laden had the psychological factor, but as far as an operations leader, I would say for the last year and a half, Awlaki was the number one al-Qaeda operative in the world. We had testimony before my committee back in January from Mike Leiter, who was head of the National Counterterrorism Center. And at that time, he said Awlaki was the greatest threat to the U.S. He was American. He understood America. He had a following here in the United States. He had a monthly magazine coming out in the U.S. We had the Christmas Day bombing was tied to him. The Fort Hood shootings were tied to him. We've had a number of arrests around the country, including New Jersey last year, were tied to him. He was actively recruiting in the U.S. and so much so that bin Laden was actually jealous of him, the fact that he had emerged as such a worldwide leader for al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula.
Peter King, Republican congressman representing New York's 3rd Congressional District, it's well known that the notion of radicalization, particularly U.S.-born radicalization, is a key issue for you on Capitol Hill. Are you saying that in the war on terror in 2011, a media figure like Anwar al-Awlaki is more dangerous than an operational figure like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who actually organizes and plans and carries out terrorist attacks, that the media figure is more dangerous?
Yes, because al-Qaeda, it's very difficult for them to attack us in large scale from the outside. And so now you have recruiting going on over the Internet. You have someone like al-Awlaki, who was recruiting worldwide. He was a charismatic figure, but he also was moving up in the al-Qaeda organization. And so he had a following over there. He had operatives around him who were planning the attacks, but he was the one who was the driving force. And he was clearly, I can tell you by all intelligence estimates, he was the one that the U.S. was most concerned about, as well as our allies.
Congressman Peter King of New York. But what does Gregory Johnson, a Yemen expert from Princeton University, think? The most important official in al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula?
I think there's actually a number of individuals who are much more dangerous than Anwar al-Awlaki. He wasn't even the leader of his own group in Yemen, al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. That would be a man by the name of Nasser al-Wahashi, who is actually a personal secretary, aide-de-camp to Osama bin Laden from 1998 up until the Battle of Tora Bora, someone who really learned how to build a terrorist organization from the ground up from Osama bin Laden. And there are a number of other people in Yemen who are much more instrumental in carrying out the attacks within the region and those that have been targeting the U.S. over the past couple of years than has Anwar al-Awlaki.
Although the focus on al-Awlaki doesn't necessarily mean that these other folks aren't equally sought by the administration. Do you get the impression that the administration doesn't care about these other individuals?
Well, I think there's been a sort of a trend in the recent years where the administration has really talked about Anwar al-Awlaki to the exclusion of these other individuals within Yemen. And there's a reason for that. Anwar al-Awlaki is someone who talks like we do. He speaks English. He carries the same passport that we do. He's an American citizen. And so there's a fascination with him that is slightly different than these other individuals. And I think that mistaken focus on him has been a little bit of a distraction when you're talking about really carrying out the war against al-Qaeda within Yemen.
Al-Awlaki, of course, more of an evangelizer of the terrorist message, not an operational leader like these other two individuals that you mentioned. How do we gauge the strength of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula this morning, September 30th, 2011?
Right. Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, what the Obama administration in the U.S. has argued is that, in fact, Anwar al-Awlaki is much more than just someone who recruits and inspires people, that he is actually operational. Now, this is not a case that the U.S. has made publicly other than saying that the classified intelligence supports us and that people in the U.S. should essentially trust the U.S. administration on making this claim. But it isn't one that has been made in public.
Talking with Yemen expert Gregory Johnson. Before we go, you have to admit, though, that al-Awlaki had influence, being connected to that 2009 Christmas bombing, the Fort Hood shooting. I mean, to have had that much influence, even with crackpots who couldn't carry it out, is frightening.
Yes, it absolutely is. And I think what we see with al-Awlaki is he's someone who, that the more the Obama administration talked about him, the more the U.S. Media focused on him, the more al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula pushed him forward really as a way to gain free advertising. And that certainly attracted people. Anwar al-Awlaki was certainly a threat, but he's not the most dangerous threat in Yemen. And those individuals are still alive and still at large.
Gregory Johnson of Princeton. What about a former ambassador to the country of Yemen? We spoke with Charles Dunbar.
I think the big point about this is there will be a kind of dilemma for the United States as to whether this means we shouldn't be opposing President Saleh. And that's something that I think we should not take our eye off the ball of getting President Saleh eased to the exits and getting on with the rebuilding of Yemen as part of the Arab Spring.
And do you think that that is complicated by this death and the cooperation between the U.S. and Yemen?
I do not think so. That is my opinion. I think a point about this is that drone strikes in Yemen do not elicit the same kind of gut negative reaction that they do in Pakistan, for example. Obviously, when there is collateral damage, of killing a lot of innocent people, it angers a lot of Yemenis. But it isn't the same kind of political fixed idea of we've got to stop these things, they're an infringement on our sovereignty.
The view of former U.S. Ambassador to Yemen, Charles Dunbar, now a lecturer in international relations at Boston University, one of three views, very different views, on the significance of Anwar al-Awlaki killed in Yemen this morning by a U.S. drone strike. Looking at some other headlines now at 15 minutes after the hour, Bank of America says starting next year, customers who make purchases with their debit cards will be charged $5 a month. They're not the only bank to do this. Consumers spent slightly more last month, but they earned less for the first time in nearly 2 years. The Commerce Department says consumer spending was up 2% in August, while incomes fell 0.1%. A pioneering singer, songwriter, and producer has died at age 75. I said a hip-hop, you don't stop the rocket to the band. Sylvia Robinson has been called the mother of hip-hop, best remembered for forming the Sugar Hill Gang. She was the mastermind behind Rapper's Delight, the first hip-hop single to become a commercial hit. She later signed Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five and produced their song, The Message. You're listening to The Very Funky Takeaway, where you can always reach us on Facebook.com/The Takeaway. And when you're there, our own listeners have a lot to say already about that Bank of America story I just mentioned.
This is David in North Miami Beach, Florida. These new debit card fees are clearly a shot across the bow, if not a declaration of war against customers. I suspect these will lead to another exodus towards credit unions.
Although Bank of America's new policy really is not too good for the customer, I'm probably still going to stick with them just because their ATMs are everywhere and they're really convenient.
Convenience versus having to pay fees for a bank holding onto your money. It's a breaking point for a lot of you listeners. What's the best or worst thing about your own bank? Post your view to the Facebook.com/The Takeaway site or just give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.